Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Here we are, Three Women, Three Ways, and we're coming to you from Blog Talk Radio. We're the show that talks about what's in the news, what's in your heart, what's in your brain, and we talk about it all from our own personal perspectives. I'm a student and have been for a long time. I've studied domestic violence issues and psychology, and I'm currently one class away from doing my dissertation in psychology. And so I'm here talking kind of about things from the research perspective, but so is my co-host, Deborah. Deborah, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Hey, hello, everybody. Thanks for that nice introduction, Heather. Every time we do this, I always learn more about or remember more about each of you, which is fun. So I'm Deborah Adams, and I have lived it, I have studied it, and I have worked it, girl. Domestic violence has been in my life for about the last 40 years. I was married for 17 years to my four children's father, and after that, I went back to college and earned a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And while doing that, I worked at a community nonprofit in my hometown, and I have been to Belarus as a representative of the United States as an expert on domestic violence.
Wow.
And I just love doing this work, and I'm going to toss it over to you, Pinkley.
Well, good afternoon, ladies, and our wonderful listeners. It is Saturday, the 15th of September, and I have been in the field working in domestic violence and sexual assault, direct services, prevention, education, awareness for the last 14, 15 years. I am a survivor of domestic violence. And today, our show is going to be primarily focused on spiritual and economic aspects of domestic violence. And before we get started this morning or this afternoon, I would like to make a reference to a website that I have found most useful when working with survivors of spiritual abuse. And it's called the Faith Trust Institute, and the website is www.faithtrustinstitute.org. And I will be, as we are moving forward today, making some references to this website in the form of spiritual abuse. And I can say that that is one of the probably main reasons that I was so confused in my marriage was because of my faith. And it was so strong and grounded in the belief that once you're married, you're always married. Heather, any thoughts on that or our other topic, financial?
Well, let me just backtrack just a little bit. And, of course, last week we talked about the types of abuse there are. And we came up with, like, seven types of abuse. And, of course, the obvious one of physical abuse, but there's also emotional abuse. And there's financial abuse and spiritual abuse and legal abuse. And today we're going to kind of focus on that spiritual abuse and on financial abuse. And I think that those are two important ways that people don't necessarily understand that abuse is going on. But remember, abuse is all about control. So an abuser will take control wherever he can. And if he can take control of your spirituality, if he can take control of your financial status and situation, then that's more abuse. That's more that he can do to control your life. And so talking about that spiritual abuse, I think, is very important because for many of us, our faith is very, very important to our lives. And for many women, unfortunately, who seek assistance through their faith, through maybe their minister or whatever, sometimes they're told that they need to stay and work it out, that divorce is not acceptable. And they end up trying to stay torn between protecting themselves and living a godly life. And I think that's really unfortunate for those women who really are in that conundrum. Deborah, do you have you worked with women who have been spiritually abused?
Absolutely. It is one of the things I would like to add to this conversation about spiritual abuse and financial abuse and why it's hard for people in general to recognize that that's just because this is invisible to the outsider. these two types of abuse happen within that personal relationship and very often do not get recognized or seen or acknowledged by the people around them. I didn't ever talk about spiritual abuse or financial abuse to my family members or my support system. And I think a good thing to do for us now is, Pinkley, do you have an example of what spiritual abuse might look like?
Oh, I absolutely do. I was just recently at an actual spiritual retreat in a faith community that I actually went to for support 15 years ago. And as an advocate, I was able to really stand back and witness the interactions that were happening. And there were two pretty strong leaders in the church that were there at this retreat who are now not with their partners, their wives. And the story from both of them is that they were crazy, and that's why they weren't around, or there was some sort of abuse in their past. And it really, really took me back to a point of time where that was my similar situation. That's what I was accused of. So here we have a congregation of community support that really isn't still continuing to support the survivor and holding the abuser accountable. And it really saddened me to see that that was still happening. And I spoke up and asked people to maybe take a different approach to that. So spiritual abuse is generally used in a way, I think, that goes against your belief, but the principles of religion are used in a way that manipulate you, and these were leaders in the church. So I was quite saddened by that interaction. I'd like to make a reference to a book that I found very, very helpful. It was Christian-based. But again, if you go to the website,
Faith Trust
Institute, right, I clicked off. What I really like about this website and the information that's given is it encompasses many, many, many different faiths. But this one particular resource is called Keeping the Faith, Guidance for Christian Women Facing Abuse, and is written by an author, Marie Fortune, and so I'd really recommend that as a resource if someone is just exploring these ideas or thoughts or concerns that you might have if you're being spiritually abused. As you said, Deborah, it is an invisible attack on your spirit. It's not something that someone's going to see as a physical repercussion. And I really truly believe that it's one of the most damaging, along with the verbal and emotional, and it ties in so closely into those aspects of abuse.
Pinkley, can we just real quickly, we want to hear from you, and we'd like you to call in. That phone number is 646-378-0430. Or you can get on our chat line, and if you don't want to have your voice on the radio, you can at least let us know your thoughts. And, Deborah, do you have the web information where they can join our chat line?
Yes. If you're listening now, you're on our www.blogtalkradio.com/3women3ways, and that's how you can click in to chat with us while we're on the air. Thanks for reminding our listeners of that, and it's a really easy way for people to remain anonymous and still join the conversation. I was wondering, though, if we could talk about some real concrete and specific examples of spiritual abuse, and I would like to add that what I have seen as a person involved in a violent relationship and as an advocate working with, you know, probably thousands of others, is that an abuser will say, you cannot go to church today, or your church community doesn't like me, so you need to choose between me and your church community. Those are two simple ways that are very impactful and very harmful to a survivor seeking support. Because if you can't talk to your family, because most abusers have already said, your family doesn't like me, your friends don't like me, you need to choose between them and me. And now you're thinking, well, I might be able to get support from my spiritual community, but now the abusive person is saying, no, we're not going to go to church, you can't go to church. Or another way for spiritual abuse would be to say, the Bible says you have to obey me. Right, there's scriptures that say that. And Reverend Marie Fortune from the Faith Trust Institute is really eloquent in pointing out ways that scripture is used against survivors of domestic violence and says, wait a minute, there's more to that scripture than just that verse. There's a lot more. And if you go on to read, here's what it says, and that husbands will honor their wives and will care for their wives, and will provide for their wives, and things like that. So this whole thing about using scripture, which is very impactful and very powerful towards survivors, Reverend Marie Fortune has found ways to help women who follow the Bible understand that. Do you agree, Pinkley?
Oh, absolutely. And it's so that example that you've given is complete isolation. Is by using that against the person by not going to church. What I think is most disturbing, I mean, all of it is pretty disturbing, is when you actually have leaders or ministers or pastors in the church that are being abusive at home, but are this wonderful, charismatic person at church. And I think that would be the most heartful a situation to deal with, and that's actually what I witnessed this past weekend. And again, absolutely, when you take your vows, I think that is, you know, it's until death do us part. It's a very spiritual aspect of someone's life, and it's incredibly difficult to separate yourself from that and to get the correct kind of spiritual guidance on that.
Yeah. Well, and Deborah, you talked about overt ways that an abuser will try to control through the religion or the spiritual faith of the woman, but there are also more subtle ways. If every time you get ready to go to church, suddenly there's a little emergency and he needs you at home, or he needs you to do this, or he needs you to go to the store, and, you know, subtle ways rather than just coming out and saying, you know, you need to isolate yourself, you need to stay away from that place. So if you start finding yourself being subtly redirected instead of being able to just pursue, you know, okay, you want to go to a meeting on Tuesday nights for a Bible study or whatever, then suddenly Tuesday nights become very busy. There's always something going on with the kids or something, some reason that occurs that you can't go and pursue your spiritual religion. And I also wanted to make the point that this is all religions. You know, we're talking a little bit about Christianity here, but this is all religions.
Absolutely. Did you know that Jewish women, there's a website and an organization for Jewish women, I think it's called Jewish Women Institute, JWI, and if you would Google that on the Internet, you'd be able to connect to them, and they have a strong support system that they are building for women of Jewish belief and faith to find ways to help them to live within the guidelines of the Torah, you know, and their biblical writings. And also there's Muslim families. It's called the Peace Family Institute, I believe. And they are also very active in finding ways to understand the Quran in ways that doesn't support domestic violence, you know. And but the problem is the leaders of them, as Pinkley pointed out, are often male-headed, and if they are doing practice within their own personal relationships and families, it's very difficult for a survivor to feel safe to go to that leader and ask for help or support. I know that when I was working at the nonprofit agency, we 1 year, October's coming up, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and each year we would target a community to try to build our relationships with and do trainings and outreach talks and things like that. And one year we decided we wanted to learn more about our community, our faith community. And we sent out letters, 300 invitations to a specific training for leaders of all different faiths. And we only had 3 responses.
Wow.
Yeah, 3 leaders came and talked to us. And what we learned from them is in their seminarian or in their course of learning to be a leader, an imam, or, you know, the church pastor or priest or minister or reverend, that they didn't receive any domestic violence training. So that could be one reason why abusers have found ways, subtle and overt ways, to use the spiritual beliefs and practices in a way against their partners.
Well, and for a lot of people, like you said, Deborah, they made vows. You know, they made vows and commitments, and they don't feel that they come between at a place where they're conflicted between their spiritual beliefs and the reality that they face for their safety. And it's sad to think that so many religious and spiritual leaders maybe don't have the background to actually address that and help the woman. I wanted to throw in a little story here because I'm appalled by this. I had a friend who was very active in her church. Her husband was very abusive, and there was a culminating point, and she ended up separating from him and getting a protection order. So she went to her church, explained the situation, and got a certain level of support from the congregation. And then about 2 weeks later, her ex-husband shows up at a service. Well, she has a protection order. And so she went to her minister and said, you know, he can't be here. We can't be in the same service. We have a protection order. And the minister said, he is reaching out for Christian support. We have an obligation to him to not turn him away. And she ended up having to leave her church. I just can't believe that.
Well, you know, and I've worked with other people, too, who've shared many similar stories, Heather. You're right. It is outrageous, and it feels very punitive to have to leave your source of comfort and what you know in order to be safe, in order to honor a legal protection order. And that is one of the problems, I believe, in our society and our culture, and you can agree with me or not, friends here, is that we have systems in place that do not work well in other contexts. So legal is a very systematic approach and response to domestic violence, but it doesn't really work well when you put in the faith community context, because not only is it sometimes our faith leaders don't have the training or the experience, but our survivors, people like us, who say, I don't really want to get divorced. I just want the abuse to stop. Mm-hmm. And they're looking and seeking ways for that to happen. And maybe they're just going to their minister or their faith leader to say, what can we do to support my spouse who's using these emotional and verbal and physical and spiritual and financial and sexual methods of abuse against me? I want that to stop, but I still want to be married. And, you know, I know that we're talking about spiritual abuse, but it's also sometimes called social abuse, because a lot of survivors don't express a more standard or largely recognized church and have that as a support anyway. So then it becomes social abuse.
Yeah.
And social abuse is part of the spiritual abuse. And when anyone has to choose, right, between staying in a marriage or staying with their faith community in order to stay married, that's a huge responsibility, and most people will not do it. Do you agree with that, Connie Sue?
Yeah, I do, and I think that you bring up some really good points. I think one of the difficulties is that if you are not experiencing the explosive physical aspects of abuse like most people think about, and that's why we're talking about these other kinds of abuse, it is very difficult to articulate in a very concise way to a spiritual person or to anyone what you're experiencing. If you don't know what you're experiencing, how are you going to articulate that?
Yeah.
And that's why I gave the examples the two examples about this most recent retreat I was at. I don't know if the women reached out to their congregation. I have no idea. All I know from an outside perspective, what I see playing out is the person who was, and I know a little bit from both sides because I get a little of the gossip that goes on. It's the only gossip that I get, but unfortunately it had to do about domestic violence. So I really felt strongly that I had a responsibility to offer some intervention or in a way to the church to say, you know, what are your best practices about dealing with this? And the examples that were both given by the men was they were crazy.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling crazy and unsure of yourself, and they represent as being charming and charismatic, and most important, they represent themselves as being the victims,
yeah.
How is not only your faith leader going to respond, but the rest of your congregation?
Yeah.
Or the rest
yeah.
of your community that you belong to, and your faith is such a vital and important piece of your surviving or awareness. And the other thing I wanted to point out, too, as we're conversing that I feel really adamant and strongly about is that when we talk about staying or leaving, it sounds like we're still emphasizing it's the responsibility of the woman to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I really want to be clear that when I talk about it, I want to talk about it in the context of a person should be able to have choices, other many choices presented, informed information so that they can make an informed decision, that it's not always the responsibility of the person to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it is our community that is responsible to step up and support women and their children. And, again, these two recent examples that I witnessed, I mean, the whole dynamic of domestic violence just played out perfectly in the field of domestic violence. Everything that we talk about was presented right in front of me. Here were these two leaders saying that they were the victim. Oh, poor is me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one who suffered.
Yep. I did nothing wrong. She was just crazy. She was out of control.
Crazy. Yeah, and sharing very intimate and private things that you hope that if you share with your significant other that will not be used in a way that's against you. So there was very private and intimate information that's being shared throughout the congregation that's now being used against her, you know, about experiences in her past. So therefore it fed more into the you see she's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's...
And what do you think look like if our faith communities could say to this couple that is in this abusive relationship, hey, what's going to work for you and your family? Would it be easier to take the abusive person out of the home, find a place for them to stay with a respected, you know, leader or family in the community while they work on the issues, instead of saying, ma'am, excuse me, you need to leave the family house. Leave that for the abusive person. Because what I have learned since leaving my own abusive relationship is that violence, that interpersonal violence, breaks the marriage contract.
Yeah.
And it changes the responsibility of the survivor or victim of that abuse. You do not have to stay in a relationship where your partner is not honoring you or respecting you or treating you with love and care. And that's a new idea, right?
Yes.
That, you know, this is someone else. This is something that someone is doing to me or to you or to the survivor. And we, as in that role, have no responsibility and no options, it seems like, except to isolate and take us out of our support communities. But it could be the other way around, where we take the abusive person out of that relation, out of that system, and give them a chance to look at their behaviors and modify their behavior. What do you think?
Well, maybe you're talking kind of a utopia that we haven't reached at this point. We talked about that, the history of the cultural history of domestic violence, and how we, you know, we do have thousands of years of patriarchy in our background, and we do have hundreds and hundreds of years of placing the responsibility for relationships on the woman. So if the relationship is bad, it's the woman who needs to take care of it or needs to get away from it or needs to, you know, I mean, that's what we come from. So when we interpret these new things that we're talking about now, the new issues that we have been there all along, but we didn't talk about them, we're still seeing them through those lenses of she's the one who's supposed to be in charge of the relationship.
Right.
Pinkley, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it goes back to if we could just keep, like, maybe three things in mind. One is that it is about survivor safety. It is about perpetrator or abuser accountability. And three, that leaving is not always the answer.
Yeah.
I have worked with many women who are, in fact, that the persons are living under the same roof. They're living together. Whether or not that's a good situation for them, that's what they're doing. So I still think that there are ways to support persons who are experiencing this. So those three simple things, again, survivor safety, abuser accountability, and that leaving is not always the answer.
I think that's a great way to sum up what we talked about. I feel kind of bad here, ladies, because we were going to talk more about financial abuse as well, but that spiritual abuse is so comprehensive that we kind of got on that one and on that issue, and I'm glad we did, because I learned a lot here. I'm glad we spent our time doing that. Let's talk about financial abuse a little bit next time, and we're also going to talk about legal abuse, which is another one of the aspects that we've discussed, ways that a controller can try to control, and that's through the legal system. And a lot of ways that people use that as an issue and as a way to keep their hooks into somebody that they want to control. But for our spiritual issue, the thing that I learned from what we were saying today, ladies, is that there's different ways of viewing things. And sometimes when we're part of a community, their way of viewing things, and maybe even the way we viewed things, no longer is applicable. Things have changed, and your ways of believing and maybe the support that you need to get from people has changed as well. And so maybe we as survivors and as abuse victims need to give ourselves permission to switch, to change, to seek out that which will help us rather than that which we're expected to believe.
Well, I like what you're saying there, Heather. And it's kind of a paradigm shift or a complete reversal of what we have been led to have survivors do. So is there some other responses that we can develop that would take in accountability and not having to leave the home? And I think the faith community can play a huge role in that. And that's a lot of responsibility, and I'm not saying it's their job alone, but I do think that the faith community could play a huge role in helping families work through this in a way that's providing survivor safety and abuser accountability.
Yeah.
And you know, I just really always love our conversations. They're very, very rich and very varied, and we do have different experiences and responses. We generally like to wrap up our show with a word of positivity, because some people think domestic violence is a dark and negative thing, but I want to say that it has all kinds of faces. But even our conversation today has led me to choose this quote. The quote is, "I like good, strong words that mean something." And that is a quote from Louisa May Alcott in the book called Little Women. And some of us have read it in our past and may not. It's a good book. It's got full of cultural and social mores that need to be questioned, in my opinion. But I do like strong words that mean something.
Like, well, Deborah, you wrapped it up for us. Yeah.
Three women.
Three ways.
Three divas.
Join us.
Yay. Thanks for chatting today, coworkers, friends, and family.